Welcome to Finish Well Radio, where changing the world starts with changing the home, with your host, Meredith Curtis.
Hi, welcome to Finish Well Radio. I'm so excited that you're here today because I am going to talk about one of my personal heroes, George Washington, the father of our country, in honor of President's Day. And just because I love history and he is one of my favorite people in history. If you're listening, I just want to let you know on the outset that George Washington is a hero for all times, for all generations. And I hope that you will enjoy getting to know him. Now, just realize I can't talk about every single thing about him, so I've kind of focused on some things at the expense of other things, but I hope you will enjoy getting to know this amazing man. I want to take you back in time into the 1700s, and there's a little boy, and he's running around playing on a big, large tobacco farm, and his dad is starting up a business, and he's very busy. He has two older brothers, and one of them is out to sea, which is so romantic and fascinating to him. And he's just running around playing and a hero to his younger brothers and sisters. And his name is George Washington, and his mother's name is Mary, and his father's name is Augustine. They used to call him Gus. And so Gus and Mary had a nice big family, and life was pretty good. And Mary was kind of a nervous mom. If it was raining, she'd say, "Oh, come in the house, come in the house. Don't go near the chimney because the thunder might get us." And she was very nervous. But Mary had this one quality about her that kind of made up for that, is that she completely loved the Lord. She was very devoted to the Lord. And it was her ambition as a mom to teach her children to live for the Lord and to love him. She seems to have really done that well with George as he is a little boy. And so there we have this mom and this bustling little family. And then George is all excited because in a few years he'll get to go to England and get his formal schooling in a really good school, and just like his older brothers. But then disaster strikes and the dad dies. And so George is now basically the man of the house because his brother is married and living in a home of his own. And so now he helps his mom to run the plantation, and he is disappointed to find out that now he won't be able to go to England. He won't be able to get that formal schooling. But in those years that were hard, to lose your dad and to have some of your dreams dashed, George kept a little book. No, he didn't have a fancy British education, but he did have a little book. And in that book, he copied 110 rules of civility and decent behavior in company and conversation. And these little rules were all about being kind, polite, and humble. So even as a young boy, he had a heart to be good. And those rules that you will find in that little copybook, he lived by all of his life. He was very kind to other people, very gracious. He was humble in the way he carried himself. He honored the Lord in every way that he could. And it was just a desire in his heart as a young man to be able to be a blessing to other people. And also, he loved the excitement of fox hunting and horse racing, getting in, you know, horse races with his friends. And he loved to go to balls and to dance. And as he grew older and into a teenager, he enjoyed all the social life that was going on in Virginia and had many friends that they remained friends for their whole life, because people then, they lived near each other and they stayed in touch and they stayed close. One time as an adult, when asked about his mom and the instruction that she had poured into his life, he said this: "My mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All that I am, I owe to my mother. I attribute my success in life to the moral, intellectual, and physical education I received from her. And I thought it was really neat that George Washington's mom is the one who taught him to ride well. She was a great horsewoman. She just taught him all kinds of stuff. One of the things that he did have an aptitude for is math, and he ended up becoming a surveyor. And that opened the door for not only a lot of adventures, because he got to travel to different places, but it enabled him to earn a living. When he was around 20, he created a little book of morning and evening prayers, and he had a different one for each morning and each evening. So there was a Sunday morning prayer, a Sunday evening prayer, Monday morning, Monday evening, Tuesday, you know, you get it. And I don't know if he wrote these prayers himself or if he copied someone else's prayer, but this is a part of his Monday morning prayer, and it's much, much longer than this. But he says this: increase my faith in the sweet promises of the gospel. Give me repentance from dead works. Pardon my wanderings and direct my thoughts onto thyself, the God of my salvation. Teach me how to live in thy fear, labor in thy service, and ever to run in the ways of thy commands. I love that. I love his heart as a young man to do what's right. And you know, God answered those prayers that he prayed as a young man for many, many years. And he never stopped praying, and we'll talk about that more. But we already talked about how he lost his dad. George went on, and he had carried this dream in his heart of being just like his big brother Lawrence, and he wanted to go to sea. And his mother was horrified that he would want to go to sea, and she was so afraid of him being a sea captain, so afraid of him being on a ship. She was afraid it would crash. She was afraid of the storms, and she just begged and pleaded with him, please, 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 don't do this, don't do this. And George honored her. He said, okay, Mom, I won't go. And that really stands out to me. As a young woman, I remember things that I really had dreams in my heart, and my father had said no, and it was so hard for me. But I love his example because he just moved on. He moved into surveying and then later running his own farm. But one of the things I think is so cool is that years later, when his brother was sick, he had to take a ship to Barbados, and he was so sick on the ship that he couldn't even come up to the deck the whole time. And he said to himself, I never want to be on a ship again. Of course, he had to take a ship to come home and all that. He wasn't a sailor. He wasn't cut out for that, and he didn't know. But somehow God worked through that whole situation. And also, by closing the door and giving up that dream of the sea, it allowed God to prepare him for, I think, a greater dream, which was to be father of his country. I just think that's so cool. At that time, he was surveying, and he was making trips with different people to survey their land that they had bought or been given to by the crown or some other reason. He had lots of adventures and lots of difficult times. But he really was enjoying life and hoping that God would provide someone to spend the rest of his life with. But he was very, very shy. He confided in someone that the girls didn't seem to want anything to do with him because he couldn't make great small talk or be funny or anything like that. He was a very serious person. And I think that's so funny because I bet all the girls had crushes on him because he was 6'2". He was very tall, very handsome. And I'm sure the girls were just too shy, and he was too shy to talk to them. He just kept moving on with his life. And in 1753, Governor Dinwiddie had a mission for him. You see, back then, present-day Pittsburgh was part of Virginia. And remember, we're colonies now, so each colony is separate. So, yeah, it's kind of hard. Pittsburgh, yes. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania was part of Virginia. The French had built a little fort near Lake Erie, and the British were worried that the French were going to try to take over everything west of the Appalachian Mountains. And honestly, they probably were, but the British were pretty upset. So Governor Dinwiddie wanted George to deliver a message to the French commander because of some boundary disputes, and also just to say, hey, what are your plans? We don't like this, and to see what would happen from there. So when George kissed his mother goodbye, she urged him to remember the discipline of secret prayer. I love that. Remember the discipline of secret prayer, George. And I thought, wow, that is great advice. And it's also advice that he took to heart, because it seems that his practice from youth to old age, from many different accounts, was a consistent example of public and private prayer. And I read an account, well, two different accounts of different homes that he stayed in, where the people who lived in the home could hear him praying early in the morning from his bedroom. And I thought that was really cool. But anyway, he needed prayer now because he had quite a life-threatening adventure. He had to go through the wilderness in the snow. So he battled the weather, the wild animals, threats of attacks from Native Americans. And finally, he got to this icy river that he had to cross. So he built a raft, and he had a guide with him, and the two of them got on the raft, and they tried to get across the river, and he took his pole, and he was trying to steer them across, and the pole, the weight of the pole just slammed him right into the icy water, but he managed to get back after plunging down to the bottom of the river. He managed to get back up and get on the raft, but no matter what they did, they couldn't get the raft to one side or the other. So eventually, they ended up just flowing with the current, and they got off on an island, and they spent the night on an island. By now, you know, they were frozen solid. The next morning, the river was just completely ice, so they were able to make it by walking across the river. And so he was very grateful that he did not lose his life in all his adventures. But when he got to the fort, he met with the commander, and the commander was thinking to himself, why did they send this little pipsqueak? And he basically said, no way, we're not leaving, we don't care what the English say. So things were starting to heat up, which of course you know is the beginnings of the French and Indian War, which was called the Seven-Year War over in Europe. In the meantime, he went home, and he was offered a commission in the colonial army. So he was basically offered a commission in the Army of Virginia. So like today it would be the United States Army, but then it was the Army of Virginia. So General Braddock, he was head of the Virginia militia or army. He offered George a command. And his mother, of course, was so upset. No, not the army. You'll get hurt. And so he very respectfully reminded her of how God had protected him on that perilous journey, and that he had delivered the message. And so he asked her, can you trust God to protect me now? Now, if you're a woman who loves the Lord, my kids have sometimes done that to me, like, well, can you trust God? Ouch. Well, of course I can trust God. So, you know, Mary gave way and she gave her blessing. So he ended up following General Braddock into a very dangerous battle. In the Battle of Monongahela, and I'm sure I just butchered that completely, things went south right away because the British, they were doing things British style out in the open, and everyone could see their bright red coats and all that. And the French and Indians, they were hiding, and they didn't know where the arrows were coming from or anything like that. So all the officers but George Washington were killed. But Colonel Washington then, he rode back and forth rallying the troops and saying, don't give up, don't stop fighting, you can do this, you can do this. While he was riding back and forth, four bullets went through his coat. One bullet was found in his pocket after the battle, and two horses were shot from under him, but he was not harmed in any way. Of course, they ended up losing all their officers, but winning the battle. And of course, he had to bury his beloved General Braddock, who he really did care a lot for, and he read his funeral and buried him at the site. So something neat that I found that I think you'll really, really enjoy, because I thought it was so exciting, is that Years later, they were traveling Washington with his friend Dr. Krayek, and they were on an expedition to the Western country to, you know, survey and explore wild lands. And they got to the junction of the Great Kanawha and the Ohio Rivers, and a company of Indians came to them with an interpreter, and at the head was an aged Indian chief. So the council fire was kindled, and when the chief addressed Washington through an interpreter, this is what he said, and I'm going to read directly from this quote. "I am a chief and ruler over my tribes. My influence extends to the waters of the Great Lakes and to the far Blue Mountains. I have traveled a long and weary path that I might see the young warrior of the great battle. It was on the day when the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forest that I first beheld this chief. I called to my young men and said, 'Mark you, tall and daring warrior, he is not of the Redcoat tribe. He hath an Indian's wisdom, and his warriors fight as we do. Himself is alone exposed. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies.' Our rifles were leveled, rifles which, but for him, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain. A power far mightier than we shielded him from harm. He cannot die in battle. I am old and soon shall be gathered to the great council fire of my fathers in the land of shades. But ere I go, there is something bids me speak in the voice of prophecy. Listen, the Great Spirit protects that man and guides his decisions. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire." Wow. I thought that was pretty cool. And not, you know, giving the Great Spirit credit, but God can speak through anyone, can't he? And this chief recognized that God's protection was on George Washington. And if you think about it, if you're listening and just thinking about your own life, maybe you've had to die to dreams. Maybe you've had to give things up. Maybe you've had disappointments like George had, where his father died so he couldn't pursue the educational track that he wanted to. Maybe you've had things happen. You know, my husband tore cartilage in his knee, and that kept him from pursuing the Olympics in wrestling. And so there's so many different things that we face that are disappointing. But what did George do? You know, he set his heart on loving God, on having a private and a public relationship with him. And he put him first. And I love that. And I love the way God, in turn, protected him. And can you imagine if he had died in that battle? There's so much that would never have happened. George Washington eventually resigned from his commission. He ended up fighting a little bit more in the French and Indian War. But basically, he began to get his beloved Mount Vernon, his plantation, into shape, and he tried some new things they were talking about called crop rotation. He learned from other farmers and farmer experts that too much tobacco growing can kill the soil. So he tried different crops and he rotated them. And so he was trying out new things, innovative things. He was involved in his church. He was on the vestry. He went to church every week. He was faithful there. And he served in the community. He was in the Virginia House of Burgesses. And he represented his area in the whole colony, voted, made decisions, and things like that. But my favorite thing about this time in his life, and actually from then on, is he had married a beautiful widow named Martha, and she came with a son and a daughter, and they had a very happy life together. And she was a great hostess. And even though he was very solemn and she was very shy, like they weren't this outgoing, sanguine couple, but they were more shy, their home was so full of fun. And their home was one of the most hospitable homes in all of colonial America. You can read letters that other people have written about their warm hospitality and the delicious food that was there. I think I actually have some of her recipes in my American History cookbook because they're just so good. George Washington loved cocoa. He loved to have a glass of cocoa in the evening, which I think is so cute. But anyway, things were starting to heat up in New England, Massachusetts to be exact, and there was the shot fired around the world, and then there was the Battle of Concord and Lexington, and things were just not going so well. And through the French and Indian War and through the Great Awakening that was earlier, the colonists were beginning to feel a kindredness with those in other colonies, and there was beginning to be a sense of being an American. It was just starting, but when that happened, the British are firing on the colonists, it just raised red flags. So George Washington was someone who attended the First Continental Congress, and he represented Virginia. As always, he was very quiet and serious. He wasn't a big talker. He left all the talking to the fiery Sam Adams, John Adams, and Patrick Henry. They had a lot to say. But George Washington was just very quiet, but not unnoticed because he was so tall. He always had a very commanding presence. On the third day, someone suggested they open in prayer, and they invited the local Episcopal pastor to officiate. Suddenly, the pastor just began to pray with fire and boldness, and George Washington dropped to his knees along with his fellow Virginians. John Adams wrote a letter home to his wife, Abigail, and said, "Washington was kneeling with Henry and Rutledge and Randolph and Lee, and by their side stood the Puritan patriots of New England." So I thought that was so cool. It was all spontaneous. It wasn't like the pastor said, "Okay, now we're going to kneel." But in the midst of that fiery prayer, he just drops to his knees. And I just thought that was really neat. And so what happened in the First Continental Congress? Do you remember? I'll just tell you. They did three things. They wrote up a Declaration of Rights. That's what Congresses do, right? They write things. They pass bills and stuff. And so the Declaration of Rights just said that they, as colonists, deserve freedom of trial by jury of peers, freedom of assembly, and freedom to representation if they were going to be taxed. So basically, you can't tax us if we don't have representation. They also organized a boycott of British goods, and they declared that if the patriots or Americans were attacked, they would defend themselves. So that's basically what they did. And then when the Second Continental Congress met, and George Washington was there too, they granted itself the power to raise an army, and they put George Washington at the helm as commander-in-chief. So now we have George Washington, who loves his Mount Vernon, loves his family, wants to be home, wants to be rotating crops and things like that. And now suddenly he is thrust into the situation. Now, remember, he's declared the general before the Declaration of Independence is signed, because now there's already fighting, there's already skirmishes. And of course, you know, we have the things, Ticonderoga and all things like that, the battles in New York. And so that begins to happen. But you have to realize, America doesn't have an army. It's a bunch of farmers, you know, it's a bunch of merchants. It's just a bunch of dudes, and they're ragtag, and you know, so George is thinking, now I've got to put together an army, and the fighting has already begun, but are we a nation? Are we not a nation? Like, at that point they were still British citizens trying to be treated fairly. So that's kind of what's going on. It's a little bit odd, but, you know, there have been civil wars before in England, and of course our tragic, terrible one. And so we are going to come back and finish talking about George as he takes over from the army, George Washington, our hero for all times, for every generation. We'll be back after this.
I love art, and I'm spending a lot of time painting recently, so when I picked up this course, I was so excited. What a fun way to explore American history, by looking at paintings of famous artists. Families Learning Together, American History Art Appreciation by Meredith Curtis is set up to follow any American history curriculum with monthly lessons to explore famous American painters. You can purchase the ebook at PayHip or KerClick. Visit powerlineprod.com to learn more about this great art appreciation curriculum. That's powerlineprod.com. Powerline Productions, being world changers, raising world changers.
You've been listening to Finish Well Radio on the Ultimate Radio Network. Now, back to your host, Meredith Curtis.
Welcome back. I'm so excited that you're with us. We're talking about one of my personal heroes, George Washington. I told you that he took command of the army. And, of course, there's not really a country. It's more like sort of a British citizens, fighting British citizens. But on July 4th, 1776, that changed. The Declaration of Independence was signed, and the fighting was officially a war. And so it was near the end of that first year. It was Christmas Eve, and the American army was, I mean, they did have some neat things happen, but it was a rough time. And so General Washington decided, it's Christmas Eve, it's the end of the year, it's cold, it's snowing, I'm going to try something daring. I don't know if he said those things, you know, but he might have. But I'm sure he did pray. And with 2,400 American soldiers, he crossed the icy Delaware River and surprised the British Army. They were camped out celebrating Christmas in Trenton. So finally, they had a victory to celebrate. And by the way, the future president, James Monroe, was one of those Americans who was with George Washington. I just like that. I think that's pretty cool. So right after that, they had won. They moved forward to Princeton, and it went really badly. And so George Washington rode up along the front lines and rallied the troops. And the troops rallied. And the battle turned, and it was another resounding success for the Americans. So that's just really cool, the way George Washington, and, you know, I only mentioned two, but he had a way to rally people. He had a way to say, don't give up, keep fighting, you can do it. And I think that's really cool. Even in the war, George Washington was really kind. After the Battle of Germantown, he discovered that his men had taken a very unusual prisoner, General Sir William Howe's dog. He returned it with this note. This is what he said in the note. George Washington's compliments to General Howe. He does himself the pleasure to return him a dog which accidentally fell into his hands, and by the inscription on the collar, appears to belong to General Howe. So I just thought he showed other things like that throughout his time as a general. Even when Benedict Arnold betrayed him and he wrote to him and said, please let my wife come to me and don't bring any harm to her because she had nothing to do with it. George Washington let her go. Now, it turned out later that was a lie, but George Washington was always very kind. He went a lot of times the extra mile to be there, to love people, to reach out to people, to really show that he cared. One of the most difficult parts of the war was the harsh winter of 1777, 1778, and that was Valley Forge. And there were hardly any food, blankets, or shoes, and, I mean, there were men barefoot in the snow. It was horrible. And a lot of the men wanted to desert. They wanted to leave. And so there is a lot of written evidence about General Washington taking time out to cry out to God, to pray. He wrote letters to the Continental Congress. He asked for funds and supplies. Somehow they survived. And even in the harsh conditions, General Washington had General von Steuben, a German general, drill the men, and he wrote a manual, an army manual, for, of course, the new American army, and he worked hard to train the men. And so the good news is that by the end of that horrible winter, they were more well-trained, and, you know, General Washington had talked many men out of deserting, and they got good news because the French were coming, and the French were coming to help them. So eventually the Patriots won the war. A new country was born. And, you know, people have said George Washington wasn't a brilliant general. I don't know. I think all throughout everything is that George Washington was a very strong soldier. He did not know fear on the battlefield. He was very, very brave, very, very courageous. And he had an ability to instill bravery in other people, especially his soldiers. They were very loyal to him and they loved him. And he was in the trenches with them, so to speak. So was he brilliant? I don't know. But was he the kind of man you wanted to serve under and lay your life down for? Yes. And I think that is why he won the war. Brilliant, that's awesome, but someone that you can trust, that's even more awesome. After they won the war and the new country was born, George Washington resigned his commission and he said goodbye to his troops. And when he went, he found out that the troops, of course, he knew this already. They were full of anger because Congress owed them so much back pay and they were not paying and the Congress didn't have any money. It was a really bad situation. And so some of the soldiers gathered in Newburgh, New York to plan a revolt and overthrow Congress. Washington arrived unexpectedly to quell the arrest. And they were all like meeting in a tavern to discuss this. And he arrives there and he just goes in and he's like, please don't do this. And he's just appealing to them, but they're still very angry. And so he says, listen, I have a letter from Congress and I'm going to read to you. So he pulls out the letter, but he's unable to read the words. So he pulls out his spectacles or glasses. And then in a very apologetic tone, he says, gentlemen, you must pardon me. I have grown old in the service of my country and now find that I am going blind as well. Well, wow. There was not a dry eye in the room. All of the soldiers cried because they realized that George Washington had given even more or as much as they had. And so the unrest was over. Before he resigned his commission, he still had one last goodbye, and that was to his officers. He met with his officers, and as he said goodbye to them, he began to weep, and they began to weep, and he hugged each one, and they were all crying. So here's this manly guy, you know, who is so stoic on the battlefield and so solemn all the time and unemotional, but he really loved his men. There's a painting, a famous painting of the goodbye to his soldiers. But he, I have to say this, was so excited to return home to his beloved family and his wife. Now, at the time, George and Martha adopted two of their grandchildren because their son had died. And when he died, it left his wife with four little children to raise. And she was overwhelmed, so she asked if they would take the younger two. So they did, and they raised those two children as their own, and they really, really enjoyed parenting both times, the first and the second. It was during this time that George Washington began to feel upset about slavery as an institution and just sad about the slaves he had that were really more like family to him. So he made a decision then to never separate families again. He wouldn't buy any more slaves. He wouldn't sell any more slaves. And he began making arrangements and plans to free his slaves in his will after his wife Martha died. So after George Washington died, all of his slaves were freed, and they weren't just freed like they're penniless with nothing to do, but they were actually left provision to start a new life. So he's the only founding father that did that. And I think it's really, really commendable and something to be excited about. George Washington continued to serve his Virginia. He continued to serve at his church and to, of course, love his family and love his farm. But meanwhile, the country was operating under the Articles of Confederation, and there were some problems. Mostly the national government was very weak. It's hard for us to imagine like a weak central government. I can't even imagine. Washington has so much power. But basically, all the states were separate countries, and they were unified by the Articles of Confederation and its Congress. So someone suggested that they meet together to strengthen the Articles of Confederation. And so all the states sent representatives to a convention, but instead of tweaking the Articles of Confederation, they came up with a brand new document called the Constitution. And so I'm not going to go into the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists and all the fighting and all, but George Washington was named president of the convention. And he did a great job as a peacemaker, because one of the things about George Washington was that he always valued people over philosophies. So people meant more to him than who will win this fight. He managed to have people work together because they respected him, who were diametrically opposed on different issues. For example, he had Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and John Adams. John Adams and Alexander Hamilton were Federalists. Thomas Jefferson was an Anti-Federalist, and they were all in his first cabinet. So just very interesting. He was able to do that. The Federalists and the Anti-Federalists duked it out, but eventually the Constitution was ratified. And the first Electoral College, which I'm not going to go into that because this isn't about government, but they met and they unanimously elected George Washington as the first president. So as he had always done, he put duty and honor first, and he didn't want to leave his farm. He and Martha didn't want to move first to New York, then to Philadelphia, but they did to serve his country. He always put people above parties, and his advice over and over was, you're an American. Don't become divisive. Don't allow political parties to sever the unity that we have, but work things out in a way that honors one another. He also made it really clear to not get entangled in Europe's mess. Don't make alliances. Don't get involved. Don't be like Europe. We left Europe. Let's not be like Europe. Let's be different. Let's be better. So after his 8 years, he was done. He went back to Mount Vernon. Now at the time, his daughter was starting to grow attached to George Washington's secretary, who was also his nephew. But before that happened, I love this. President Washington had given this advice to his daughter, Nellie. When the fire is beginning to kindle and your heart is growing warm, propound these questions to it. Who is the invader? Have I competent knowledge of him? Is he a man of good character, a man of sense? For be assured, a sensible woman can never be married to a fool. And I thought, wow, that is such good advice. I wish that every dad said those words to his daughter, because that is really special. But she ended up marrying someone that George heartily approved of. They had a great, great marriage. And he enjoyed his last few years at Mount Vernon and died surrounded by his family. At his funeral, his eulogy was delivered by his very good friend and fellow Revolutionary War hero, Henry Lighthorse Harry Lee, who was the father of Robert E. Lee, by the way. Henry Lee said these famous words, George Washington was first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. And I hope that you will learn more. I just barely scratched the surface about this great hero, but I hope that you'll investigate him more and learn to appreciate the man that God chose. And honestly, when I look back at all the different things, all the opposing forces, I can't imagine another man than George Washington, who was so level-headed, so calm, so careful in making decisions, who would have been able to preside over the Constitutional Convention, who would have been able to lead the American soldiers in the Revolutionary War, and who would have been able to be the first president. He did not try to become a king. When asked, okay, how do you want us to address you? Should it be Your Highness, Mr. President? And he said, no. How about just Mr. President? And that's how that got started. So King George, when he heard about it, said, if that man refused to become king, then he is a greater man than I. Very interesting, you know? But he lived a simple life, and he served wholeheartedly, and he did his duty for the love of God, for the love of his country, and for the love of people. And I love that about him, and I'm just very proud on President's Day to remember George Washington, the father of our country. God bless you. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Finish Well Radio with Meredith Curtis and the Finish Well team. Please listen in every first Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here at the Ultimate Radio Network.